What's up, everyone? This is Coaching the Kid with NBA head coach Don Casey, and I'm Nick Hatch. How's it going, Coach?
Pretty good. Pretty good. And yourself?
I'm doing good. Thanks for asking.
All right. So what do you got on the agenda?
So last night was the Hall of Fame ceremony. There were 13 people inducted into the Hall of Fame. We can't, unfortunately, get to all of them, but we'd like to highlight some of them and talk about them today. That includes Chauncey Billups, Vince Carter, Michael Cooper, Walter Davis, Doug Collins, and Jerry West, along with a new set of NBA superfans who were also inducted to the Hall of Fame, including Spike Lee, Jack Nicholson, James Goldstein, Billy Crystal, and Allen Horwitz. We'll start off with Chauncey Billups. What did you think of Chauncey Billups as a player? He's currently a coach for the Trailblazers. What do you have any thoughts about him?
Well, you know, he broke out really in Detroit. There's other stops. Larry Brown really used him very well and gave him a degree of confidence. He was a scorer and a shooter where, you know, he could take the ball and go where he wanted to go and score. And he's struggling a little bit up in Portland, last I looked. But he's a very competitive person. Fine, yes. I thought maybe you would be disappointed that my name wasn't in this.
I know they should get you in there,
okay,
Coach.
Okay, thank you.
Next player up, Vince Carter.
Well, he's a powerful player, an excellent college player. And one of the things that he is proud of, that eventually he went back and finished and got his degree. He promised his mother in North Carolina, but he's, well, particularly known for the dunk up in San Francisco. But as all these players, they're solid.
Michael Cooper.
Yeah, Cooper, yeah, I coached against him at Clippers all those years and then at Boston. And he was known as the stopper, so to speak. So he always got the assignments of the scorer on the opposing team to try to, contain him, impede him. And Bird has said more than once that he will go to his grave saying that Michael Cooper was the toughest guy that he had to get by. And see, they only saw each other like two times a year. So it was like a set game for Michael. It was a big game. And being able to stop that, it wasn't like he was playing us, say the Clippers, four times. So and they did. He maxed it out. But Bird, did okay, but not easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next player, Walter Davis.
Yes, from another Carolina guy. Had a little speckled career at Phoenix. Got off-court problems, which he solved with the good help of the many people there. And became an explosive player of all dimensions. And as I just said to Derek, I did not know he had passed. Young, vibrant, but, these things are happening to our NBA players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next up, Doug Collins.
Yeah, I got to know Doug when he was at the Sixers and I was at Temple. He's very high strung. Very compulsive player, very demonstrative, very high-strung, so to speak, very bright as an individual and the game, and was a major instrument on a team of the Sixers who had a lot of talent with Dawkins and Bobby Jones and. World Be Free was there for a while, so no, Doug, and he did well in coaching. I liked him very much in broadcasting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, next up is the late, great Jerry West. He was already inducted to the Hall of Fame as a player, mm-hmm. but now he's the first person to get inducted to the Hall of Fame as a player and a contributor.
I think he has three, doesn't he? Player, contributor, and as a GM. I think, if I'm somewhat correct, that was very unusual to have someone that has three Hall of Fame awards. But you have to think back in those days that as the NBA was, you know, breaking out big, those Hot Rod Hudley, who was also from West Virginia, and Rod Thorne, and then you, Jerry West, who just got better and better as he went on in the NBA. I think, well, you're too young, that half-court shot jumper he made against the Knicks in a playoff to send it into overtime. And he had tough guys guarding him also, from Fraser, Bradley, et cetera. But he really got his other, which is hard, going from player to front office. But he was fortunate. He had Charmin, who was a Boston Celtic player that became GM at the Lakers and was good. And Jerry was under him. And then when he left, Jerry, you know, took over and did what he did. He put teams together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I touched on earlier, there's a new part of the Hall of Fame that they added, and that's with the super fans. That includes Spike Lee, Jack Nicholson, James Goldstein, Billy Crystal, and Alan Horwitz. What is their impact to the NBA and to the sport of basketball? Being a super fan, you know, most people wouldn't think that they would have an impact, but they really do. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it was really became a major plus with Nicholson, his stature in the movies, and as a, you know, a pure fan, he had, you know, and he bought, they didn't give it to him, bought four tickets every year there, and he was good, you know, he was a little smart, you know, like, you know, we used to go, you know, get on him, but, and he would give it back, but he was a, I think the one that really started it. Jimmy Goldstein is another friend that is a unique individual. You can go to his site, jimmygoldstein.com. And what you see is what you have to believe. I used to say he dresses up like Wyatt Earp. He's got always leather. He never dresses in what we do. And he goes to every game, Clippers and Lakers, every home game. And then after the first round, he's at every reachable playoff game. And he's been doing it. I met him in 84 at the Clippers, and he had been doing it since, like, 1965. And knows the game. So he was the first, and it's called the Jimmy Goldstein Hall, a Gallery Hall of Fame. So it's named after him. Spike used to come, well, you know, everybody knows Spike. Billy Crystal came to the Clippers games, solid fan. And so we had Crystal, they had Nicholson, and then Diane Cannon, who was not one of my favorites for the Lakers, jumping up all around. And the guy from Philly, I don't really know, but they like him, and he does a lot in the community.
Yeah, so...
But he's nuts.
What's it like having these people in the crowd, like seeing them in the crowd? Does it affect the players? Does it affect the dynamic of the game?
No, well, they recognize it. They would recognize it if he wasn't there.
Mm.
So, but after a period of while, it's, you know, you can't let that, you know, cloud your mind up. But he was good. Nicholson did not chirp and say things out to agitate a player along the line. He was very professional. Every once in a while, he jumped up against officials. He knew everybody, all the mm-hmm. officials and et cetera. And he was very good. And Spike is Spike. He remember Reggie Miller.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I always...
That. Now, Reggie scored, what, 10 points in 5 seconds or something like that?
Yeah, it was like 9 points in 10 seconds.
That was the threes, right in front of...
Right in front of Spike. Gave him the choke sign.
See, but they're all good people. I mean, they're fans, they're are professional people off the court, but they're good people. And they add to the game, too, the entertainment value. So it's easier when the league was back trying to promote the game, they would show Nicholson and others. So, no, it's they're good.
Mm-hmm. Would they kind of stay in their lane as a fan, or would you ever see them maybe in the locker room or behind the scenes?
The locker room is another event. It's like a church. We never had any one come in. We had like Senator Curry, Senator Kennedy. Boston has many, many good fans, but not always like movie stars. So I never saw them. Well, I never, maybe after like a championship or something, but not on a day-to-day basis. I don't believe so.
Yeah. Well, just to transition over to another subject, the Celtics and Nuggets, they played preseason basketball in Abu Dhabi around a week ago, and that connects with Basketball Without Borders, which you were a part of, and they hosted Basketball Without Borders in Abu Dhabi last year, and this year it was in Africa, and Moses Moody and Emmanuel Quickly, they were coaches for Basketball Without Borders. And what was your experience like? And can you just explain what Basketball Without Borders is to people?
Well, a very bright young lady named Kim Bohoni, who worked for Ted Turner at TNT. Now, again, you're too young for this. In 1980, we did not go to the Olympics. Jimmy Carter, because there was a war in Afghanistan, and it was like a Cold War. So what he did, Ted Turner, he began the Goodwill Games and from Atlanta, and she was working for Turner, and with the Goodwill, she saw an opening that you could, penetrate, particularly Russia, but got involved with Russia early, and would send people there for clinics, celebrities, coaches, small scale. Then it got bigger and bigger in her mind, and she created the term Basketball Without Borders, where the NBA would just come in, bring coaches and players, and also then they start bringing players like from Africa, the best players in Africa. And that was back in the early 2000s. And now you see how many kids all around. San Diego State's got two or three from Africa that it really took off and still measuring. And they're going back again this year in Johannesburg, where we were in the first time. And they fly in the 60 premier young basketball players and conduct a major camp, major atmosphere for those players. When we were there, they had 100. So now they've scaled it down because there's too many good players. So it's got its reach. The other one we went to was in New Delhi, which had an interest in basketball. But the NBA has kind of like backed off. I don't know if it's political or not. They can, you can sell a lot of T-shirts and caps. I'm a little surprised that we're not reading about India like we once did. But and China's going to be back in the picture. They're smoothing that over. But Abu Dhabi is not the latest. I mean, they're. They're trying to get in every sport, boxing, football, So, and it's been the New York Times in a very negative article of the NBA going over there because of their human rights and so forth. But I think the NBA thinks that doing this, exposing us and getting out and leaving, they always have a computer study. They'll leave there. Maybe 50 computers and for the students eventually. So the NBA just doesn't go in and do the clinic and go out. They always leave something there as a structure, and then you remember them a little bit more. So they're very good in doing this.
Mm-hmm. What kind of players have come out of Basketball Without Borders that you've coached or that you know of who?
Since the war, I don't remember as much. We didn't have where we were getting players then was Croatia, which had Petrovic. We had Dino, Raja, both in the Hall of Fame. So we were into Croatia, a little bit Serbia, but mostly Croatia. GM Dave Gavitt, because he was the head of the Big East, he had made a lot of contacts over there. But we were not into Celtics into Africa. It was too early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, just speaking on Abu Dhabi, the Celtics and Nuggets played there about a week ago for preseason. The Celtics beat them twice there. How important can preseason be? Is this could be a potential finals preview. Do the Nuggets losing these games, does that matter at all?
Not really. You don't want to. I mean, they want to win, but I don't know the minutes the guys were playing. Some they sit out. They want to showcase. The NBA wants you to showcase the players. But coming out of the West is going to be hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's bunched up. I still think the Celtics have the edge in the East, but it's a natural. The two final teams. Taken over there, and that is part of the attraction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just adding on to the finals preview with the Celtics and Nuggets, I'll switch over to what happened yesterday with the New York Knicks and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yeah, so Dante DiVincenzo, we all know he was traded from the Knicks to the Timberwolves in that Karl-Anthony Towns trade. And Dante DiVincenzo, he was at the free throw line, and he was chirping over at the Knicks bench. People think he was saying that he's talking to Tom Thibodeau and saying that, "I can't finish right, Tibbs. I can't finish right, Tibbs." And then he also brought up that he said to somebody on the Knicks bench, people don't know for sure who he's talking to, obviously, but he said, "That's what happens when they let you run the show." After the game, Jalen Brunson's dad and DiVincenzo were getting into it, and they were talking back and forth and chirping. And it's just so interesting to see this out of them, because DiVincenzo has that close-knit relationship with Jalen Brunson and everyone over at Villanova. What do you think about that? Does this mean anything?
Well, it's a little bit surprising, but he's such a good player. I mean, he's a key part in that trade because of the – I know the assistant coach of Minnesota, they're really good, the head coach, and they run good stuff. They'll max him out. But I think that, Tibbs is all in. I mean, I don't know how to word this. I mean, basketball is his life. Well, it's our life, too, but no, it's his life. And he is, extremely focused and doesn't do anything else, really. Watches film and so forth. So I think that maybe he's been known to be a little harsh, a little critical, too much practice, which has calmed down. So I think that he was reiterating. Tibbs said, "Well, you don't finish well," whatever. As to the Brunson's father is an assistant coach there.
Yep.
Came from high school. Came to high school. So generally, it's a package deal, which Mark Cuban, never figured out till the end. And he's a good player. The old man played Temple and a little bit in the league. So I think that it was a little. I remember when you said this, and here I am now. Obviously, he didn't want to be traded. And I think he thought he wasn't going to be traded by the verbalization of the GM or Tibbs. So it's unusual, but he was annoyed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearly he looked annoyed. And going back to the Celtics, they're undefeated now in the preseason. Do you still think they're the favorites to come out of the East?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes.
Do you think anybody challenges them at this point?
Well, I think New York will always be there. I don't know about Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they should be there. But you go down to, like, the Bulls and the Wizards and, I mean, Bullets. The Wizards, what do you call them? Wizards? Charlotte. You know, they're not in the mix. You know, Orlando, I don't know the Pelicans that well, but I hear they're well-directed. Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
But the Celtics are top to bottom for players, and he's an excellent coach, mm-hmm. Joe. So I still say the Celtics. In the West, I have no feel to you.
No, I don't know if there's a clear favorite coming out of the West. I mean, you have the Thunder. I think they're gonna be very good.
There you go.
On top of their internal improvement, and they're still young,
yep.
getting better. They added Alex Caruso and Hartenstein.
I like him.
Yeah, they're both very good players who will help them immensely.
And the coach is good. I don't forget his name, but he's good.
Yeah, he's a young coach.
Yes.
And I think that helps their system a lot, having a young coach along with young players, having that dynamic. And
so you don't like old guys?
Not that I don't like old guys, but I think you see with the NBA now, you're hiring a lot of younger coaches.
Finally.
Yeah. If you look around the league, even with the Utah Jazz, with Will Hardy, he's a young coach. The Celtics getting Joe Mazzulla, the Rockets. Ime Udoka's not super young, but he's still a younger age coach. You see a lot of NBA teams going that direction.
Well, they're finally moving guys up through the system,
mm-hmm.
rather than bringing...
Recycling coaches.
So to speak. But that, I mean, they recycle it at General Motors, at Tulsa. I mean, they all do that to some extent. But, you know, it's like Chauncey, you know, he was all those teams, and Larry Brown had been here, there, and everywhere, and it happened to be Detroit, and he thrived, you know, under that system with Larry. So there are those guys that, you know, can tweak him and had a lot of experience. The younger coaches, if they've been assistants for a while, you know, they know the game,
mm-hmm.
and how they want to do it. And it's bringing a little bit of a new culture and expertise. It's good.
Yeah.
They're good.
And just on the topic of coaching, and we talked about this, you talked about this a little briefly with Tibbs. Tom Thibodeau, his system with playing his guys so many minutes, do you think that's sustainable for his team?
Well, that has been the knock on him. He wears them out. And then now you come into the management. It's all that stuff that was started by Popovich, which really annoyed the NBA because people are paying good money at San Antonio, coming in like once a year to see Tim Duncan, and he sits them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really – it's not fair to the person that's keeping your product going, but yet – he's doing what he thinks is the best for his players. So I think I don't think Tibbs pays attention to that at all.
Mm-hmm.
He just coaches the way he wants.
Yeah. Do you think there is some validity to his players being too tired in the playoffs or injured when it comes playoff time, or do you think that the playing time doesn't affect that?
Well, you know, it's yes and no. I mean, we never at Boston with Bird, McHale, Parrish, Joe Klein, you know, they all, you know, the seasoned guys. I mean, they just played. Now Bird was a little under the minute situation because of his back, and if we took him out and he sat, it bothered him. So now. But that happened. All the pictures you may see now, he lays on the floor mm-hmm. right in front of the bench. So yes, somebody like that. But they, you know, if you keep saying that, the players are going to say, you know, I feel tired, and I don't know. It's in the system. I don't think that it should matter that much. That like LeBron wants to play,
mm-hmm.
and he can. So you're going to say, well, you're only going to play 25 minutes a game because we want you to play in the playoffs. Well, I mean, how about if you don't go past the first round? So no, it's a mix.
Yeah, you touch on minutes restriction and bringing up Larry Bird, LeBron. The new show, The Starting Five, just came out. It follows LeBron James, Jason Tatum, Anthony Edwards, Jimmy Butler, and DeMontis Sabonis throughout last season.
Oh.
And it follows them and just their journey throughout the season when they're playing with each other, interviewing them before and after games. And one big topic, I just finished the first episode. They're talking to LeBron about his minutes restriction, and, you know, you just touched on it. He wasn't happy with the minutes restriction. How did some players react to that? Like you mentioned Larry Bird.
Well, no, Larry knew, but it depends. You know, I mean, if you say this, you sound like you're knocking. If you at that time were playing Orlando, who was struggling, and you're up by 15, 20, and Larry was never one, like, I got to get my points. So they know. You sit down with the trainer, the orthopedic people, et cetera, and say, listen, what, you know, we want to do. And, again, he could not sit long because he was stiffen up. So it was – and we didn't want to jerk him in and out.
Yeah.
So but if it's explained properly – because they all want to play, you know, and there's seven other players sitting on the bench. So I think it's hard for these coaches because this topic is jumping all over about load management. Never heard the term before.
Mm-hmm.
That's dropped a little bit, but I just saw in the paper today, was it Embiid?
Embiid?
Yeah, he's out. They made an announcement he's out for the rest of the preseason games because he's in knee management.
Mm.
Knee management.
Yeah, not load management, yeah, knee management.
But that's at their regard, so they're being cute. Instead of saying we're going to arrest him because it's his knee, or don't even tell him that we're arresting him, but knee management. Looks good. The owner's like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make. You brought it up how seems like maybe this idea of load management is kind of internalized in the players now, that like kind of makes you think that you need the load management. Maybe it can be helpful to rest your body and take care of your body, but now you said like the players can be like, well, I feel tired now, you know?
Well, you know, the thing is that if you say there is a load management and you're at the 30 minutes and he's still in there, well, the guys on the bench would say, hey, come on, it's time for him to come out.
Mm.
So I think each coach has his own little feeling. But, see, they have their own chefs now, their own planes. They're very much more conscious of the health. And smartly, because look how long Kobe and LeBron.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can pick that paycheck up for 20 years.
Yeah.
So they're very conscious of that today.
Yeah, definitely. You talked about coaching philosophies, and I just wanted to bring this up because I thought it was really interesting. Joe Mazzulla with the Celtics, Jaylen Brown was talking about how, you know, Joe Mazzulla tries to keep it fresh and new with his philosophies, and they call him Psycho Joe because of how just different that he is. One philosophy they have is Joe Mazzulla had them study how sharks in the water attack their prey, and he emphasized how they attack their prey as a unit. And he had a whole segment for the players to watch and learn about. So I just thought that was super interesting. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, Well, you know, I like it because it breaks up the routine of just practicing, et cetera, and then showing other aspects of how things get done. I don't think the Great White has a pack of sharks with him. I didn't know that they could show that wolves. Wolves do not attack alone. They attack in packs. So I think he's trying to create the mentality that even a shark needs other sharks, you know, to help him get his results.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Phil Jackson was in with the Zen, et cetera. I think it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a reflection on how they play because the Celtics kind of run, people call it matchup hunting. So the Celtics would try to get a lot of pick and rolls or create a lot of switches where you have a smaller player guarding Tatum or Brown or Porzingis, and then they, you know, viciously attack that one mismatch to create opportunities
to
score.
That's why they should play zone.
Yeah, you think so?
Sure.
Well, you're the temple of the zones.
I know. You want 1-800-466-COACH? It's in the game, but it's not, you know, over. Better, but I think Miami showed that.
Yeah.
They went from eighth place to the finals. But they played 2-3. I don't like the 2-3. We're a 1-2-2. And one, Mike Woodson said, asked me to come in at the Hawks that year. When they were in eighth place in Atlanta, and I was there for 2 weeks, and when I got the zone in with Herb Brown, it was very good, and with a little bit of a matchup, you know, move over a little bit, and they played the Celtics, 2-3-2 games. So I was there for the three, and that was Pierce, Rondo, Perkins, Garnett, mm-hmm. and
Allen.
Yeah. That's a five. And they beat him three straight by over 25 points. Now, why? Well, you know, Doc Rivers, the coach, Thibodeau was assistant, and Kevin Eastman. Game one, it was a stunner. And game two came up, and they were running the same stuff. Game three came up, and they were running the same stuff. So the players were able to groove in. It was a little surprising. We had Zaza, Hartford, Bibby,
mm-hmm.
Childress.
Was Joe Johnson on that team?
Joe Johnson, Williams, Marvin.
Marvin Williams, oh, wow.
And they did good.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
Yeah, you guys.
So it can have a place, but most of, I go back. At one time, a great deal of the NBA coaches had also been high school coaches, assistants in college, head college coaches, and then assistants in the league. So you had Hubie Brown, high school coach, Ramsey, Mata, Jimmy Lydon, Paul Westhead, Jack McKinney. You know, you can go on. So they wouldn't be as much stunned if you put a zone, because they had seen it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Pure pro coaches have not seen it. So that would be an edge, I think, because they're not familiar with it. And they'll pick and roll against it, but that can be handled. No, I would have definitely advised any team to do it just to annoy the other team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you go watch the 92 Pacers Celtics on YouTube, the game where Larry dove down and hit his head on the floor. Bob Hill, good coach, after every foul shot, he ran some type of a zone,
mm.
you know, or pressed. And it was annoying.
Mm-hmm. Just to switch it up, just to give a different
and,
look.
And, you know, D. Brown, he had five turnovers.
Wow.
And, you know, it was a good game. Tough game. You're talking Reggie Miller, Perkins, Chuck Person, Fleming, LaSalle Thompson. I mean, they were good, but did it beat? No, but did it come close to really causing dilemmas? Yes,
mm-hmm.
yes. And we didn't, you know, we practiced against it, but it was not like, you know, it was too passive.
Yeah, definitely. I can see how that works. I saw this a couple years ago. You mentioned with the Heat and Eric Spoelstra.
Yes.
When they played the Celtics in the conference finals, and when they would get to that zone, it would be super difficult for Tatum and Brown and to start creating so many turnovers just off of that zone. Mm-hmm. And that's really what, in a way, made the Celtics kind of blow it up after that, because that's when they got Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis to really spread the floor. They had to get some more consistent shooting to really beat that zone.
Well, the DNA of the NBA is man for man, mm-hmm. and you know what you do with it. You know, you switch, you press, you know, whatever. How do you handle pick and roll, etc. You have to remember now the NBA in the early days was very conscious of scoring points.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want the offense to be stymied. So then they had, a ton full of illegal defensive rules. I mean, it was bizarre. I never really learned it. The players did, because I came right from college. It was crazy. So, but they got away with it for a while, and then it, boom, and it really starts slowing the game down. And that's when David Stern, who had the power to do his contract, what's good for the game or something, he took over him. And the general manager said, yeah, it looks good to us. He said, oh, it does. And threw all the rules out now, but they still have the three-second rule. The only, mm-hmm. It's the only league in the world that legislates against defensive tactics.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't do it in football. Secondary can do anything they want, right? So you could say, well, we're playing man because the people love the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hell with them. You know, we're going to mix it up. You can tell my defensive coordinator what he can't do. So you always hear the word zone periodically. And, you know, I get to know not Reggie, another Raider guy from when we were there in El Segundo. And they would mix it up. There'd be three guys playing zone, two guys playing man.
Wow.
You know, to try to offset the quarterback. And that's why the quarterback in the NFL, I mean, wow. He's treated like he's up for sainthood. I mean, they protect him so well. You don't have him, you're in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So the NBA was that conscious. Maybe they needed it at that time. But then it got bad. You know, it's like a push-pull league, bump and run with the Pistons, and then Riley in New York, et cetera. They changed the rules. Why don't we just play basketball?
Mm-hmm. One rule that people focus on now is the goaltend, because they see in FIBA there is no goaltending. They can hit the ball, you know, off the rim and stuff like that.
Well, that was in, and then they took it out because Stern liked it, because he felt, one, it's a very difficult call,
mm-hmm.
because they don't see it, and second, he thought it would enhance rebounding.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, he was, you know, he always say, I'm a lawyer, you know, I don't know the game, but it wasn't for him, the game would be in trouble. Now, in the France game, there's the Wembley, how do you say his name?
Oh, Victor Wembanyama.
The 7-3. Yep. So in our game against him, he's wandering around in the lane.
Mm-hmm.
You could do that in the Olympics.
Yeah, and he had a huge impact because of that.
Well, he can block the shots, but he's a great distractor. You know, he's going to make you change. But they'll go after him. I mean, they went into him. But I don't see anybody in the world complaining that he's down there on defense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a game.
If anything, it was entertaining to watch.
And you got
to
move him out of there. You got, you know, put him in a pick and roll.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't come out. I mean, there's too many coaches that are fearful of the zone. Why? They don't know how to attack it.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And they think they do.
But they don't.
In the real world, they don't. You know, they'll pick and roll it. They'll dribble against it, which is a tactic. But no, it's the thing about that. Can I tell you how smart FIBA is? Remember the Hackershack? Now, I was on the committee from the past coach that they're calling. And I'm saying, like, three shots. Oh, it found back. And we're all saying something like that. FIBA, if they're hacking, like, in the backcourt, they never called it.
Mm-hmm.
We're not paying attention to it.
Mm.
And so I'm down there hugging them. Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the ball. And so if you did it on, the ball side half court, so what happened? They stopped doing it because they weren't getting any calls. Then FIBA wasn't paying any attention to it. And the United States are going three shots, ball on the side, so forth. So they stopped calling it. It's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So FIBA's good.
Yeah. Well, Coach, we're creeping up on our time. Was there anything specific you wanted to get into or bring up?
Jeez. No. Although, two couple things. The coach of Utah Jazz, his father just died of ALS.
Mm.
And he has a foundation with the Neurological Department of Utah, JDL. And our down here, we just had a walk October 6th for ALS to raise money for research here at UCSD. UC Riverside is doing it, as well as, Harvard and those places. And we got to get money into the pockets of the stricken person's family, because they can't get out. And it's just so demanding. So with the young man there, the NBA is jumping in, which is good because he is good. So there's hope. Now, here's a young guy, rather sitting around saying, well, that's life. Some people get this, some people get that. So he just started that, and I think you brought his name up. He's a Danny Ainge protege.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to go out there and meet him. I haven't seen his team play, but I hear they're good. He's young, right?
Yeah, he's a young coach, a young team there. So,
no, that's outside of that. Are you buying lunch or how are we
working? Yeah, we can get whatever. Let's do it.
How are you handling your father?
I'm doing the best I can.
Under the circumstances?
Yeah.
His father's our unofficial producer.
Yeah. What did you say he was doing earlier in the car? He said he was...
Oh, yes, with us?
Yeah, he was over...
We got a lot of notes here. Shoot a paper on. He was overcoaching.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, Coach,
Have you seen San Diego State?
I haven't watched them play in a while. No.
I mean, they practice now.
Oh, no.
I think they have a couple exhibitions.
Do they really? Do you know when they're coming up?
Early. They got a controlled scrimmage up at UCLA.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's this Saturday or not. Yeah, they're interesting. They're very long and quick. And I think their defense will help their offense.
Yeah.
But they got 15 new players with this. What's the thing called? Portal.
The transfer portal?
Portal. 15 new players.
Yeah. It's changed college basketball a ton for everybody.
Your father said that I should have an NIL. What's that?
Name, image, and likeness.
Of me?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how we could do that, but we can research into it.
Well, you kick in the first 100. Right? And the rest of the followers, yeah. But no, I think San Diego State, I don't know, USD, you know anything?
I'm not sure. I'd have to.
UCSD. What, you're just a pro guy?
Well, yeah, I focus mainly on the pros, yeah.
I think it's very big. They're smart. That they're all playing each other this year.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego State,
Are they really?
Then. And I think it's good. It could be like a little three, you know, to create the overall basketball atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all playing and sitting on stage. I think it's going to be, you know, a year or two from now, very good for the public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that, but I think that would be.
Oh, you stick around. I'll keep you up there. Yes.
Thank you, Coach. Well, thank you, Coach, for your time. This is a great podcast. And just for anybody listening, we just thank you so much for listening to us on Coaching the Kid. And we'll catch you next time.